Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. That would be me, your host Rosie. As I warned y'all last week, I'm about to go on vacation, so this week's episode is going to be a little bit off the norm. It's not going to be, well, for one, it's not going to be about Bruce Springsteen. It's not going to be about any musician. It's actually going to be about me, so allow me some vanity this week. Not really vanity, just backstory as to how I got here. Because I didn't need to research me. I know my own life decently well. And I'm in a slightly autobiographical mood because Mr. Van Zandt just dropped his memoir this week. And it's fantastic. I've listened to the first two chapters on Audible already. And he narrates it. And let me tell you, him sharing his draft board experience is like comedy gold. I laughed out loud and I was at work with headphones on, so I'm pretty sure my clients thought I had completely went cuckoo in the other room because I couldn't stop laughing. It's funny, it's soul-searching, it's informative. I will probably do a review on it when I get done, so look forward to that. But for now, today, I will be discussing my musical history, similar to Mr. Van Zandt discussing his in his book. Incidentally, with as much as I discuss this man in my giant poster that I have behind me in all my videos, he should just, like, hire me to work at Underground Garage or at least sponsor my podcast. I mean, I'm just saying. Stevie, hit me up! You're my favorite person on the planet that I don't know. But that aside, my backstory in music obviously starts with my parents, because, I mean, they are who raised me. My mom had the job, my dad stayed at home and homeschooled my brother and me, and did real estate stuff on the side. But, my mom's music is, like, it's all 60s. She knows very little after the 60s. Unless she's been, like, excessively exposed to it by my dad or myself. My brother wasn't really around much enough in his teens to expose my mom to a whole lot of his music that he was into. But, anything you can dance to, her standard for good music is, does it have a beat and can you dance to it? And I honestly can relate to that a little bit, but my musical taste goes outside of that. She loves the Beach Boys. She also has a decent amount of folk interest. She had a cassette tape of folk songs that had, like, Michael Row Your Boat Ashore and Where Have All the Flowers Gone, and, like, If I Had a Hammer and some other stuff like that. Very, like, 60s hippie folk music. Really good harmonies, though. I loved that cassette tape. I wanted to listen to nothing else as a kid. When I got my own cassette player boombox thing, I played the heck out of that cassette. And my dad's musical influence is definitely where, like, the long album cut, eclectic, weird, obscure artist thing comes from. My dad is the one who introduced me to Rick Wakeman. He also listened to a lot of the Moody Blues, Sade, Billie Holiday, Antonio Carlos Jobim, Stan Getz, Chet Atkins, Buffalo Springfield, almost anything Neil Young ever did, really. Eric Clapton, the Allman Brothers. At its most basic forms, you could say it was, like, jazz, especially Latin-influenced jazz, and soft, heavy rock, if that's a thing. Because, like, I don't really know how you'd categorize Buffalo Springfield and Neil Young in general. Like, it's not heavy rock. It's not Led Zeppelin or Deep Purple, but nor is it just, you know, like, Foreigner. So, I don't know what you categorize it as, but that was my dad's thing. So, like, obscure rock and jazz. And some other stuff in there, too. Not so obscure rock, like The Who and, do we have any other major albums? I'm trying to remember what we had. We had a lot of Moody Blues. It was my quest throughout my entire childhood to make sure I had all of the first 7 albums on vinyl. And I had 6 for a very long time, and I finally found In Search of the Lost Chord. I was In Search of the Lost Chord for a very long time. But yeah, so that's my mom and dad's musical influence. My older brother, who was 5 years older than me, he and I would clandestinely watch MTV when mom and dad were out of the house. It's about the only time we could get along when mom and dad weren't in the house. My brother and I fought like cats and dogs, and I'm talking like feral cats and, you know, dogs that were raised by Michael Vick. We did not get along, but we could agree to watch MTV, and so I got introduced to Pink and No Doubt and Jewel, POD, Lord Help Me, Nickelback, Lord Help Me, Creed, you know, stuff like that, NSYNC. I mean, the music really wasn't that great, but some of the music videos were pretty cool, like Let's Be Real, the music video for Bye 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 by NSYNC is still pretty iconic. I had a definite, even though I was only 8 or 9, the little girls even had to have like their team NSYNC or team Backstreet Boys, even though they weren't our boy bands yet. We weren't old enough to be like posters all over the place, boy band teenager girls, but we still had to pick sides, and I was definitely on team NSYNC. Did not like the Backstreet Boys. For the sole fact that you had to pick one or the other in the late 90s and early 2000s. There was no in between. But yeah, so that was my early musical influence. One of the things that my dad did, I don't know that he really specifically intended it as music appreciation for my brother and I, because our homeschool curriculum was very loose. Hence why I was reading a 735-page book on the Six Wives of Henry VIII at 11 and calling that my history class. Because it was the history I was into. And my parents were like, reading is reading. History is history. Have at it. Here's the entire background of human civilization. There's a set of Encyclopedia Britannicas. Good luck finding a set of those in anybody's house anymore. But anyways, so I listened to, you know, the new music through my brother and the old music through my parents, and I always gravitated towards the older music anyways. Like, I liked, you know, the new stuff, and it was kind of new nifty because it wasn't my parents. But I mean, I was 8 or 9. I wasn't really into rebelling yet. I never really did get into rebelling. But I remember, like, my first ever mixtape, because I am just old enough and my parents were just old-fashioned enough that we still had cassette tapes when I was a kid. And there was one that nobody wanted anymore, or it may have been actually blank. Either like I picked it up at a yard sale with my mom or something because I wanted a cassette tape to record what I wanted on it. And so I made a mixtape, and I do not remember any other song that's on this other than This Diamond Ring by, I want to say, Gary and the Pacemakers did that song? Somebody did that song, and I had This Diamond Ring on there. I think I may have had some Frankie Valli on there too. I'm not too sure, but I know for 100% cold stone fact, This Diamond Ring was on there. And I think Love Potion Number 9. Those two I'm pretty sure on, but definitely This Diamond Ring was on there. So that was like my choice. I wasn't going to modern pop radio. I was going to the oldies station, always. I will always pick the oldies station. When I was even later in my teens, I'm like a freshman in high school, and we lived in a small town in Texas, and only on a very clear night could I get K-Love out of Dallas, which is still to this day my favorite radio station. And I would tune it in and play it really low on my boombox so I didn't wake my parents or disturb their sleeping. And I think that must have been where I heard Bruce Springsteen's Promised Land, because I don't know where else I would have heard it on, because I didn't have the Darkness on the Edge of Town album until my 20s. And it's still one of my favorite songs. Like, the first time I heard it, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have heard this at some other point in my life. This isn't my first time hearing this song. And it had to have been late nights listening to K-Love. Like, so I. Some of the things like the 70s artists, you know, discuss about their childhood with, you know, like Bruce Springsteen discussing having the transistor radio under his pillow, the Ramones singing about the similar situation. I get that a little bit, at least a little bit more than most people my age, I think. I had a old school childhood for a millennial, and I'm very grateful I enjoyed it. I enjoy being able to relate to the older artist's, childhood at least a little bit. May have been a boombox and not a transistor, but I was still falling asleep with the radio, listening to, well, the music that was around when kids were had their transistor tucked under their pillow. So I listened to some, what my friends were listening to, what my brother was listening to. I'm trying to think what, though. It was so unmemorable. I mean, I know when I was in junior high, a bunch of girls really loved Jesse McCartney. When I was in junior high, though, my new music influx came from two mix CDs that my brother made me. There was actually three, but I think my dad threw away the first one because he didn't approve of the music, or I lost it. But I had the other two, and they were the only ones that really mattered. In fact, I think it's coming back to me now. I think my dad was like, those CDs your brother made me, you should chuck them. So I brought him CD number one, which didn't have any music on it that I really cared about, and kept CD number two and three, in the reserve. And they had Sublime, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Seven Nation Army by White Stripes, Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, and a couple songs by Rush. I actually recently listened to them, and I surprised myself that I still knew all the words when I haven't listened to some of those songs since I was 14. Specifically, there's one, I want to say it's by Sublime, about the Rodney King riots, and I was like, how do I still remember every single lyric to this song? It's been half my life ago. So that was kind of cool. I was like, I'm scaring myself over here. But it dawned on me that I need new home furnishings. So once again, we filled the van until it was full. Since then, my living situation's been more comfortable. Yeah. I knew the whole song. Even some of the police chatter that's in the background on the song, I remembered. I was like, how is this possible? Music just sticks with me a lot, I guess. And I think that song may have stuck with me because it was probably the first time hearing a profanity in music for me. But yeah, so I had those by my brother. Most importantly, off of those, my brother gifted me with a beautiful gift. Not one, not two, but three Ramones songs. So I got the big three. I got Blitzkrieg Bop, Rock and Roll Radio, and I Wanna Be Sedated. While me and my brother don't get along in a whole lot, I can at least be grateful that he gave me that. And about this time, my uncle gave me his record collection, which most of it was trashed, but it did have Born in the USA, which I listened to a lot. Of albums I listened to in my early teens, the top five is probably Born in the USA, literally anything by the Moody Blues, The Best of Cream, The Who, Who's Next, and I honestly am trying to think what it might have been. Oh, probably Layla by Derek and the Dominoes. Or the Blind Faith album. So basically, a lot of Clapton, a lot of Moody Blues, and the one Bruce album I had. That one album was so all-encompassing that up until recently, when I really got back into Bruce, I thought Rosalita and Born to Run were on Born in the USA. Because I was like, well, they're Bruce songs, and that's gotta be the only place I knew them. But I guess, in my ye olden buccaneering days on LimeWire and FrostWire, wasn't old enough for Napster. I had to take the virus-plagued LimeWire and FrostWire as my vehicles to acquire new music with questionable legality. I was 14. Where was I gonna find the money to buy all this music? Now that I have a job, I buy my music. But radio wasn't playing these songs, where was I gonna hear them? And yes, sometimes LimeWire lied to me, like the time that they told me, I Fought the Law was by Green Day. It was not by Green Day. That is The Clash. I was 13. I didn't know the difference. I didn't know who the Clash was. I mean, I knew their songs, but I didn't know who they were. You know, I wouldn't have known Joe Strummer if he smacked me upside the head. Which would be kind of shocking, because I think by that point he's probably no longer with us. Joe Strummer's ghost smacking me as a teenager upside the head for thinking that that's Green Day and not the Clash. But yeah, all along, I've kind of had like a little bit of a pull towards like punk and indie, always. Like, if it's, you know, there and it's something new, like something outside of my parents' music, it's gravitated towards that. In fact, it's interesting because like everybody wants to say, you know, they seem to think that like if you like a certain music, you have to have a certain look to go with it. Like if you like punk, you need to go with a punk look. If you were into Fall Out Boy and Good Charlotte, you had to like dress like the emo kid. I didn't ever do that. I didn't really realize there was supposed to be a look. I just discovered the music, liked the music, absorbed the music, hid the music from my parents if it wasn't, you know, something I thought they would like, or I would sneak it in. Like, I'd introduce it to my mom, and sort of like, she was okay with most things. And then, like, maybe if she was like, oh, that's really good, you know, has your dad listened to this? I'm like, oh, okay, maybe. Maybe I can spring this slowly on dad. I can bridge it over, like, Santana's Smooth with Rob Thomas is a, you know, be like, oh hey, see, not all modern music is bad. This guy did a song with Santana. Because I liked Matchbox 20 as a teenager. Like them, The Killers, Augustana, The Kooks. Those were some of like my bigger bands of. Oh, and the Goo Goo Dolls. Always the Goo Goo Dolls. I love them. The first concert I watched on YouTube or anything like that. I mean, now all I do is watch concert footage. I don't watch movies. If I want to watch something, I usually watch a concert, not a movie these days. But the first one I ever watched was like clips from the, I want to say it was like 2004 Buffalo concert that the Goo Goo Dolls did in the rain on the 4th of July. And I wanted to be there so bad. My mom's like, under no circumstances should my 14-year-old daughter be anywhere a rock band is playing on Independence Day and there is an inordinate amount of inebriated people there. But me, I was like, yeah! And then, you know, I of course had my obligatory boy band phase. I do not feel a person's musical tastes should be judged on who their boy band phase was. It's just part of being a teenage girl. You have to have one. It's like a rite of passage. In my case, I didn't do too badly. I had the Jonas Brothers. Bless the hearts of the generation after me who got stuck with Justin Bieber. I'm so sorry. But I will say, while not the greatest band ever, the Jonas Brothers were instrumental because they turned me on to some other artists. Because, like, rather than just listening to them and just picking my favorite band member, it was Kevin, by the way. I went, like, when I would read the teen magazines and they would list their favorite artists, I'd go listen to who their favorite artists were. I'm like, okay, well, who's Elvis Costello? I've never heard of him before. You know? So I got turned on to Elvis Costello yet again. Tiptoeing on the punk and indie line again, even with my boy band phase. I mean, it just. At least the Jonas Brothers played actual instruments, that's all I gotta say. And as a good Christian girl, I kinda had to pick the Jonas Brothers. But yeah, so that was my boy band phase, but in the midst of having a boy band phase, I was still digging the classic music. I had a huge Billy Joel phase. I mean, I still do. Every time Billy Joel radio comes on satellite radio, I usually like make that a preset while it's on there for a limited time. And you know, yet again, so I'm like, oh, I still remember all the lyrics to this song, and I haven't listened to Careless Talk since I was 15. Neil Diamond too. Loved Neil Diamond. Still do, not necessarily to the extent. Rod Stewart, enjoyed my Rod Stewart. That was a little bit later in my teens though. And yeah, so that's like my teens. And so I get to college. And do I get into modern music? I mean, I got into some new music, specifically like at the dances I would go to, because I'm in Texas, they were, you know, two-step swing, you know, country swing style dancing. And so, of course, you're listening to country music, but thank the Lord, country music was still moderately decent at the time, and we were picking the best of new country. As in, we had all the Red Dirt Country artists. So that would be like Aaron Watson, Kyle Park, Granger Smith, the Josh Abbott Band, Corey Morrow, the Bart Crow Band, who I got to see live when I was in college. Like, of all those ones I've just listed off, the only ones I haven't gotten to see live was Granger Smith. Because he was getting me a little big even by then. But, like, for those of you not familiar, Red Dirt Country is to classic country what punk was to rock and roll, like 60s rock and roll. It's basically, it's like a revival, but with a modern, slightly more current twist on it. Like, it's taking a lot of the fundamentals of old country, so you still have a fiddle in most of these bands. And it is none of that hip-hop with the twang, modern country, Luke Bryan BS that they play on country radio these days. It's closer to, like, what would get played on Stevie Van Zandt's country channel of Outlaw Country. So it's true country, not the hip-hop with the twang that is modern music. And that was what was played at the dances, so I learned to two-step and swing and be flipped upside down and all that fun stuff to those songs. Which, like, that's a thing that I do sort of share with my mom, like, her whole adage for music is, does it have a beat and can you dance to it? And while my musical taste does expand out of that, I love to dance. If you follow me on Instagram, you find this out every Thursday when I do Thundercrack Thursday. I twisted my ankle dancing to Bon Jovi's You Give Love a Bad Name on my living room. It's also where I learned that you don't dance on carpet. And I did it right before the school year, so I had to, like, walk or always wear high tops for, like, the first 2-3 weeks of school, because I did a number on my ankle. But then I also popped out of the car in the drive-thru to dance to the marching band segment at the end of Brad Paisley's Online. So that alone is a context for the range of my musical taste. So I'm doing all this dancing in college, which is the best thing about my college years. And my college years were pretty swell all around, but being able to go dancing almost every week was bliss. Only time in my life I've been able to do that. But the other thing I got into in college pretty heavily was old soul. So, like, soul and R&B. So you're talking Smokey Robinson and Sam Cooke and the Main Ingredient and the Cornelius Brothers. All that stuff. I also had a very big Owl City phase. Yet again, the variety of my music strikes. Otis Redding to Owl City in the same sitting. You know, who knew? And then I liked some of the contemporary Christian music, because, I mean, I'm going to the college ministries, and they're actually the ones that were putting on the dances. It was, ironically, the Baptist College Ministry put on quite a few dances. It was them and the Methodists who put on the most dances. They also put on the most free food for the college kids. It was a pretty lush time in life. But anyways, so, like, I was going to, you know, the college ministries, and so I got turned on to some of the contemporary Christian music, and it did, you know, help at the time when you're in those low points that you get, you know, because you're figuring out adulthood in your early 20s, and late teens even. But, you know, it didn't really stick that much. I remember liking 10th Avenue North. In high school, I liked Switchfoot. Later, you know, like mid-20s, I got into Sidewalk Prophets and some other contemporary Christian artists, which are, you know, they're good. My beef with contemporary Christian music and Christian music historically, in spite of it, you know, relating to my faith, which is important to me, it's usually really bland. Like, it's boring. I'm like, who said you can't use a guitar solo to praise the Lord? Because, I mean, if David could do a harp solo when he was doing the Psalms, I think you can step it up and actually play something more than a few chords. Like, nowhere in the Bible does it say, thou shalt not solo. But I also think that you could have if you don't want a solo in Christian music, you could just have a Christian punk band. Something that if I get better at guitar, I kind of aspire to doing. Because I'm, not to get too religious or anything over here, but Jesus Christ was pretty punk. Very anti-establishment, you know, God-man person, like, definition of anti-establishment. But that may be an episode at some point in the future, especially if I ever get, you know, the musical talent, because I have been learning how to play guitar for about the past year. And if I ever get the musical talent and a couple other people to start a band with, and they're into this idea, this may come up in an episode, but until then, probably not. But yeah, so that was like, you know, and by 22, I was done with modern radio, pretty much. I had my Taylor Swift song of 22, and that's about when I said goodbye. Her next album sucked, and everyone pretty much since then has, and, I mean, she wasn't that great to begin with, but I mean, I did relate to her songs as a teenager. Most girls of my generation did. So she served a purpose for a while, but not after that. And then I kept listening. I mean, I would occasionally, like, give meanders into modern radio, and I would be like, I don't really like any of this. Or if I did, I'd like it for about 2 weeks and be like, I don't like it anymore. Like, it had no staying power. So I just kept on listening to my Moody Blues and my Beatles and my Red Dirt Country. And, you know, I mean, I was listening to songs by acts, but I wasn't really looking into that musician. Like, I would listen to Every Rose Has Its Thorns by Poison, but I had no idea who Poison was, and I didn't listen to the other songs. I was like, I like this song because it has roses in it. Imagine that. But by 25, I started to dig into, like, the deep discography of Queen. I think probably because I saw the trailer for Bohemian Rhapsody. But I binged all 15 albums. I went and discovered Roger Taylor, the drummer's solo career, which I love. I love his voice. It's like a buttery Rod Stewart kind of voice. It's really difficult to describe. I don't know anybody else who sings. I think my friends and I concluded it's like Roger Daltrey and Rod Stewart had a baby as far as the vocals go. it's really difficult to describe, with like a smattering of like something really smooth, you know, but not like jazz smooth, like something like, I don't know, Justin Hayward's vocals. Like it's really difficult to describe, but I love his voice. And hearing him do Racing in the Street kind of changed my life, because the lyrics to that song just hit me really hard. And so I went and listened to the Bruce version, but where I was at in my life, I didn't like it. It was too slow. I needed loud music. Fortunately, Queen turned me on to Led Zeppelin. And Led Zeppelin turned me on. Let us be real. Crushes do turn you on to certain musical, you know, you'd be like, oh, who's that? And be like, oh, they make music? What kind of music do they make? I mean, until the guy stopped listening to Pat Benatar and Lita Ford and Joan Jett and the Carpenters, you know, I feel like I'm safe over here admitting that I have crushes on some of my musical acts, but I would like their music even if they weren't attractive. I like Southside Johnny's music, put it that way. You don't have to be attractive to make good music, but it doesn't hurt in getting a girl's interest. And making good music can make you more attractive. So, that being the case, you know, I got into Led Zeppelin, something my dad strongly disapproved of because, very sort of strict person that he is, he definitely didn't approve of songs like, sorry, I have an alarm, definitely didn't approve of things like The Lemon Song and Whole Lotta Love, and I was too naive, even at 25, to really understand, you know, the off-colorness of Whole Lotta Love. I was just like, he loves her, it's fine, right, Dad? And my dad's like, okay, I'm not sure how you're still this blithely unaware at 25, but okay, sweetie. But anyways, so I got into Led Zeppelin, and they, you know, got me into Bad Company, which got me into Free. I mean, I knew songs by Bad Company. And of course I knew All Right Now by Free, because everybody knows that song pretty much. But I went and binged their whole discographies, you know, everything that they'd ever done. I own pretty much every single thing that Paul Rodgers has ever done that I can get my greedy little hands on. The voice is the voice, and he's the best. Like, him and Roger Daltrey and Roger Taylor are like my Mount Rushmore of guitarists. I mean, of vocalists. Mount Rushmore of guitarists is like Jimmy Page, Alvin Lee, which I mean, my dad did introduce me to Alvin Lee in 10 years after, so I was getting some of the bluesy rock when I was a kid, just not Led Zeppelin. My dad held it against them. I think it's because his brother-in-law was a big Led Zeppelin fan, and a bunch of people were, of course. I mean, he went to high school in the early 70s. Everybody loved Led Zeppelin, and so my dad was being a hipster and didn't want to like them because everybody else did. And then the man who married his sister was a notoriously huge Led Zeppelin fan, so that really did them no favors with my dad. But yeah, so I got into Led Zeppelin, and then, like, the summer after I turned 26 or 27, it was in the summer and spring, I just kept hearing Badlands on the radio by Bruce Springsteen over and over and over, and I was like, okay, I like this. Like, I'm turning this up every time I hear it, and I didn't think I was that big of a Bruce fan other than I liked Born to Run. Like, I haven't listened to the Born in the USA album since I was a teenager. My dad's political discrimination against Bruce did not help him in this household. But then I realized, I was like, it's totally dumb to discriminate against artists based on their politics whatsoever. I'm like, you can't be, you know, because like I said, my parents are pretty conservative. It's like, you can't be all mad at people who reject Ted Nugent because he's political, but then turn around and reject Bruce Springsteen because he's political just because you disagree with one person's politics and agree with the others. I'm like, you can't be mad at people for doing what you're doing just because they're doing it on the other side of the spectrum. So that's why I was like, I don't care what an artist says politically. I'm just gonna listen to the music because that's why I like them. I don't like them for their personal views. I like them for their musical output. And the fact that, especially with Bruce, like, you know, his songs make you search your soul and make you a better person. And I'm not gonna, I mean, I have friends that we don't see the same things the same way. And it's okay. That was like the big thing in the 60s, was it was okay to be different, and we've lost that, which is disappointing. Civil discourse needs to make a comeback. And that's about all I'm going to say on the issue. But listen to people rather than shouting them down is important. It goes in with that whole be kind to each other thing that I end most of my episodes with. You know, listen. Try to understand your neighbor. Go listen to all those 60s hippies, peace and love, flower children songs. They weren't all wrong. Their movement just got co-opted by, you know, drug use. And they lost their steering wheel and their sense of direction when they got off on the drugs. But they weren't all wrong, and we could do with some of that peace, love, and understanding, again, to paraphrase, you know, punks more. The hippie punk, Elvis Costello. The hippie punk who looks like Buddy Holly and is named after Elvis, because that's not confusing at all. But, you know, that mentality could do with a comeback, and just accepting that other people have other views. So on that philosophical note of acceptance and love, because love is punk, let's be real, in the modern generation, it's not what the establishment or the news or anybody wants you to be doing. They don't want you to actually try understanding your neighbor and their perspective or loving them or doing anything. They want you to judge your neighbor on whose campaign sign was in their yard last November. Or even during the midterm elections. They don't want you to actually participate in the whole peace, love, and understanding ideals. So go be punk. Go listen to Elvis Costello. And what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? And on that note, I will conclude. I will be posting